We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, Notre Dame fans, welcome back to another edition of the Irish Breakdown podcast. A little bit of a special edition here, Ryan. I'm Brian Driscoll, the publisher at IrishBreakdown.com. That is Ryan Roberts, our director of recruiting. And as the title down there shows, we actually have it correct this time. It is our recruiting hour. And so, Ryan, we're going to talk. We have some topics that we want to discuss that will kind of be the hour. And then when we're done with those topics, whether it be a little before an hour, at an hour, a little over, then we'll go into some questions. So going to be recruiting focused today. As always, if you want to ask some team questions, you can. We will answer those at the end, but we're going to stick to the topic. And we are going to stay with recruiting, even though there's some NIL stuff that broke. We're going to talk about that stuff tomorrow. Today, we're going to talk about recruiting. And before we kind of dive into the selected topic, Ryan, I do think we should probably discuss sort of that there will be some news this weekend, one way or the other, when we look at recruiting. That is on Friday at 4 p.m. Sullivan Apshur, Belmont, North Carolina. Sullivan Apshur is going to be deciding between Notre Dame, Clemson, and NC State. We will be live at 4 o'clock to discuss his decision, what it means for Notre Dame one way or the other, and kind of talk about what's next for Notre Dame one way or the other. So, Ryan, I think before we kind of dive into the topic, I do want to spend a couple minutes here on the Sullivan Apshur situation because, you know, I think this is going to be the first recruitment that shows if Harry Hiestand can kind of get a guy that's not already kind of predestined to Notre Dame. And you said this from like the first time you talked to Sam Pendleton after he got his offer. I remember you texting me like, yeah, that kid loves Notre Dame. I mean, it was so obvious right away that Sam Pendleton was very aware of Coach Hiestand's background and what he could do and the academic piece. And as you get to know his family just a little bit, you're like, yeah, I can see why a kid like that would like Notre Dame like he does. So that was going to be one that, you know, let's be honest, most Notre Dame coaches probably could have got that one done if they would have offered Sam Pendleton and gone after him. Sullivan Apshur is a little different situation, Ryan, because even though Notre Dame had him on campus in January and Coach Hiestand went down and met him after he was hired and, you know, during that winter sort of on the road period for the staff, you know, Clemson pretty close. I mean, Clemson is pretty close. This is the thing. Clemson is, we talked about this. Clemson, Belmont, North Carolina is actually closer to Clemson in distance than where Monroe Freeling is to Clemson, who's actually from South Carolina, right? When you look at where they are. So he's only 2 hours away from Clemson. Clemson was considered the team to beat. And this was going to be the first opportunity for us to see, okay, can Harry Hiestand get on the trail along with Tommy Reese and Chad Bowden and go get a kid that maybe wasn't sort of a typical, of course you're going to get that kid type of prospect.
Yeah, no, it's going to be really interesting to watch because, I mean, for every reason that you just kind of, you know, that you kind of named there, Pendleton is a kid who, from the first time I spoke to him, said that he wanted to hear from Notre Dame, right? So there was an obvious interest from Notre Dame just to begin with. And then you add in the fact that Coach Hiestand was the one that identified him, right? He saw him and That's my guy, right? Like, and then it starts from square one at that point. But when you don't start from square one with a guy like a Sullivan after, it's a different conversation because they were recruiting this kid since Jeff Quinn was the offensive line coach, obviously. So that in just general, and we know this, it kills momentum a little bit, right? Like, even if you're in a good spot with a guy, when there's a coaching change, the momentum stalls. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't mean that it dies, but it does stall for a second. So then you have to get refamiliarized with the young man. Coach Easton has to, you know, do his due diligence, make sure I first and foremost, and identify that, like, yes, that kid is a kid I want in my offensive line room to start out with.
And that's also something that the kids have to be concerned. Like, you talk about breaking the momentum, Ryan. It's not just the first C-stand, but if you're Sullivan Abshire and Monroe Freeling and Charles Jagasaw and all these kids, Jagusa and all these kids, it's, okay, is Coach Easton going to want me? And that's going to create some doubt. And in that window, and it was like a month between when one guy was hired and fired and the other guy was hired, it was about a month. There's sort of a lot of sort of in your head kind of building up like, okay, is this new coach going to want me or not, or whatever the case may be. So back to what you were saying though, Ryan, but it's not just on Notre Dame's end that creates some of that decision-making process.
Yeah. And it obviously Coach Easton did identify him and said, yes, I obviously want him in the class, and he became a priority. But even before Coach Easton was there, I didn't feel overly great about that recruitment. I've been, you know, very candid about this, is the fact that I didn't love where they were with Sullivan Abshire. I always thought they were running a distant second, not that they weren't in it at all, but I thought Clemson had separated themselves, to be honest with you. And then obviously he gets back on campus for the Blue Gold game, and that completely changes. You know, it's a combination of alumni on campus, the vibe, the atmosphere around Notre Dame, the relationships that he's building with the coaches and the players and the other recruits that are on campus. And now you go into this week, Brian, on Friday, of course, and you feel pretty good about this one, man. Like, obviously, you know, we have kind of done a complete 180 as far as how we feel this recruitment is kind of landing. And I mean, Notre Dame is the favorite going into that one, right? And we've been talking that it's been an odd year for a Clemson-Notre Dame battle for these offensive linemen from the Carolinas.
Mm-hmm.
And
you're going to have an article coming up on that this week as well. I got to edit and stuff. But, yeah, it's an interesting look at it. It really is.
It's not a typical one at all. And, I mean, Notre Dame is, I know Clemson technically didn't make Sam Pendleton's top four. That was like his finalist.
It's because that was a strategic move. Let's be honest about that. Schools are good about that. Notre Dame's previous staff made a killing. I don't know if Brian Polian never lost a recruit at Notre Dame. Never. They always dropped a kid before he was ready to make a decision. Right. That's just how it goes. So there's strategery in that, Ryan, you know, where they're right on the kid and all of a sudden they back out, even though that's a big need for them. No, they knew what we knew, that he was going to go Notre Dame. And so you bow out in hopes of then saving face with, and it's a smart strategy, if we're being honest, because now it's like you can go to Abshire and Monroe Freeling and some of these other guys and say, hey, look, you know, we backed out of that one. We were going to let Notre Dame have that one because you're our guy.
Right.
And it's actually, I was joking with the strategery thing, but it's actually a smart aspect of recruiting. Now, Notre Dame just did it to save face. Some of those guys just did it to save face. But there is some strategy involved in that, too. And I think Clemson did it more from a strategy standpoint rather than saving face standpoint.
Right, right. Well, and I'm glad you illustrated it that way, because all that to say is that Notre Dame is on number two of the Clemson versus Notre Dame battle for an offensive lineman. And they have a chance to go at worst two out of three if they're able to close on Abshire this Friday. So it's an interesting battle because, again, it's a proximity debate versus a developmental debate from a Notre Dame side. But you have to love where they are for Sullivan Abshire, which if you asked me a month ago, I would have still said, don't feel great about it. But I feel great about it now. So we're in a good spot.
So that'll be Friday at 4:00. Obviously, we'll carry that one. We'll break it all down for you. We'll have a commitment preview, hopefully, that morning before that. And we'll dive into sort of what's next for Notre Dame following whatever the decision that he makes will be.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Ryan, let's dive into our next topic of conversation. And our next topic of conversation is kind of looking at where things stand with Notre Dame's kind of new coaches, right? You know, Brian Kelly completely overhauled his coaching staff this offseason, which I think ended up being a positive, right? You get kind of as much of, you know, it's not even a knock on guys like Mike Elston that I thought, you know, did some really nice things at Notre Dame or other guys that left. It's just more about you want to make sure that when you're trying to really build the program your way, you have as few people as possible that are going to be saying, well, we used to, we did it this way, we did it that way. No, it's like, okay, coach, how do you want to do it? Because, you know, I'm kind of new here. And some of the people that were brought back, or one of the person was brought back, wasn't necessarily someone who was on board with the way that it used to be, right? That's obviously Coach Easton. And some of the coaches that were already on staff are guys that Marcus Freeman has either worked with in the past, like Mike Mickens, or a guy like Chris O'Leary, who, even though he was on staff before Coach Freeman arrived, was someone that, you know, Coach Freeman had a big role in promoting him to the safeties coach. So, like, it's a heavy influence of people. Even, you know, you look at things like, you know, the GA on defense, James Laurinaitis, is, you know, former teammate of Marcus Freeman's, right? So you have a very you were able to kind of overhaul things. And so we talked a lot about when the hires are made of, you know, these are the ones we're excited about, this is what we think is going to happen, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But really, you don't know until they get on the road. So we're going to kind of do sort of a midterm report card, right, Ryan? I mean, the reality is we're now in month five. There's going to be a signing day in month 12, right? And then there's going to be a couple periods in between here in the summer where, you know, your recruiting is not really allowed, you know, when camp starts and they get those dead periods. And so we're almost to the midway point, and we wanted to kind of do this at the beginning of May to just really look at how the new coach has done and evaluate what they've done so far, and then discuss what they need to do moving forward to really close out and meet their needs and objectives and prove that, you know, like what Coach Freeman said, is you can't be just a coach here, right? Like, you've got to be able to recruit, and we'll find out if that's true or not. And look, we've got to start with the guy that's had the most success so far, right? I mean, the one coach that of all the coaches, and they've all multiple have had really strong influences or impact so far, but the guy that's clearly had the biggest impact so far is Al Washington. I mean, you talk about he's landed three commitments so far, and Devin Houston at number 192 overall, according to the 247 Sports Composite, that's your lowest ranked defensive line commitment right now. And think about that. They've got four kids committed in 2023, another kid committed in 2025. The lowest ranked guy is Devin Houston at number 192. Crazy. Obviously, Keon Keeley and Brendan Vernon were already on this staff, but you know, obviously Coach Washington has been able to play a huge role in landing Boubacar Traore, Devin Houston in the 23 class, and Brandon Davis in 24. So, Ryan, I guess to wrap it up really easily, so far so flipping good for Al Washington when it comes to his early impact on the recruiting trail.
Yeah, I mean, we'll call it a progress report, right? Al Washington was a Big Ten recruiter of the year, right? So we went into this situation where he had been a linebacker coach. What was the defensive line implementation as far as a coach going to look like? We know he had done it in the past, obviously dating back to even his time with Harold Landry at Boston College. So he has had experience in that department. And your expectations were high as a recruiter. The reputation he had created at Ohio State was impressive, to say the least. So he comes in, and it's quiet for a little bit, but it's going to be quiet because, you already had Keon Keeley and Brendan Vernon in the class already for him. And, of course, Brendan Vernon's a top 100 player by basically everybody. Keon Keeley's a five-star recruit basically by everybody. And I think the first thing that you do when you step in the door is you have to make sure that those guys are fully on board, right? Like, they obviously, Mike Elston recruited them. We have nothing but positive opinions of Mike Elston as a football coach. You have to now show, hey, I'm Al Washington. I'm different than Mike Elston, but you should still come play for me because I'm a great coach and I'm a great developer and I can do all these great things for you. So that's the first and foremost thing, is that you had to get there and you had to keep Keon Keeley in the class. Brendan Vernon, you weren't too worried about that. But Keon Keeley being a five-star from the state of Florida, you have to make sure that he is fully on board and understands the vision long-term when you're Al Washington. Right. So that's step one. And then we've talked about this. This defensive line class has a chance to be special. Immediately after Boubacar Traore decommits from Boston College, Notre Dame becomes a real player. Coach Washington, of course, a part of that big brigade of, you know, closing now. He makes the move, obviously, and that happens relatively quick after the last visit, obviously. And then Devin Houston's a guy where he closed on him, and the staff closed on him, despite him not being back on campus. So that's paramount to the impact that he's had. And then you're just talking to Brandon Davis Swain I talked to him briefly, but Sean had a chance to go a little more in depth with him, and everything he said about why this was the right time as a 2024 kid in, what was that, April, right? Or late March, whatever it was. And he is a 2024 kid who is still a sophomore in high school, said, I sat down with Coach Washington and that was it. Mm-hmm. I didn't need to see anything else. I already liked Notre Dame. As soon as I sat down with him, it was a done deal. So as Notre Dame fans and faithful out there, you should be excited about this. Because not only do you have a four-man class in 2023 that is amongst the best, definitely among the best in recruiting right now, will be.
Hands down the number one D-line class right now.
Absolutely.
There are some other schools that maybe can catch them, but if they, you know, but that's going to be, when we'll get to what could make that uncatchable. But Ryan, you know, you kind of talk about it. Like when I introduced this subject, I talked about the three kids he's landed, right? And which is impressive enough in its own. But I think immediately shifting the focus to Keon Keeley and how important that was is really important, because we're feeling a whole lot different about this D-line class if he gets the three he got but lost Keon Keeley. Feeling way different. And
absolutely,
you know, and it kind of started when Coach Washington was hired. You know, Keon had some very public things to say about it that were positive. You're like, okay, cool, you know, good sign. But that was big because, again, you know, Keon Keeley has a chance to be the best prospect in this class for Notre Dame. And I would argue has a chance to be the best non-quarterback in this entire class, not just for Notre Dame, but in the country. If he can continue developing as a player, he's already a top 5 to 10 type of player. I think he's like number three on On3 Sports, right? Three or four.
Yeah, something like that.
So that was a huge one. And look, it's important. And the first two guys we're going to talk about are going to be line coaches because, you know, I wrote an article yesterday, Ryan, that look, there's this notion that people say, well, you know, you got to win this way. If you're going to win a championship, you got to do it this way. And I'm not a believer that there's one way to win. LSU won a completely different way than Alabama won their first several titles, right? And LSU, you know, their title in 2019 was different than the one they got in 2007. you look at Ohio State does it differently. You know, Alabama does theirs. Clemson's done it differently. Like, everybody does it different ways. You have to do what works best for you and your program based on what you can recruit, the systems you want to employ, and then the schedule you play. And so when I look at Notre Dame, for me, I think Notre Dame can get outstanding skill players. There's no doubt. They have been. I mean, they've had multiple first-round draft picks in the last 10, 15 years at receiver. They've had several kids picked in round two and three. You know, they've been able to produce great tight ends and good running backs. And, you know, there was a time back in the day where Notre Dame was pumping out first-round defensive backs every year. But even back then, Notre Dame didn't often have the depth of speed across the board at those places. And I think that's still going to be true. I don't know if Notre Dame's ever going to put a receiving core on the field that's going to look like the one Ohio State put on the field in 2020 that had three top 12 draft picks. I don't know if they're ever going to be able to have a receiving core like the one Bama had a few years ago that had, like, what, four first-round draft picks on
and,
it, right?
And the Ohio State one might have a top 20 kid next year as well. So
and he was also insane on the 2020 team, right? Yeah, and so yeah. I don't know if they're going to have that kind of depth. But here's what Notre Dame can and should be able to do. They have to be able to dominate in the trenches on both sides of the ball. And there have been years where, for example, if the 2015 team dominated in the trenches on both sides of the ball, Notre Dame wins a title that year. There's no question in my mind. Now, they should have dominated on both sides of the ball in the trenches because they had NFL players across the board on defense, but there were reasons why. The point, however, is that they didn't dominate, right? We could go back into some, you know, Brady Quinn had some years where if they had the kind of defense that Notre Dame's had the last three, 4 years, that 05 Notre Dame team might have been something if they had a defense like the one they have now, right? You know, and so we could kind of play this game, you know, going back is there's been years they've been dominant on one side of the ball, but not the other. And this is a year where, you know, this is a situation where I think based on hiring Al Washington, hiring Harry Hiestand, which are two huge moves, and the emphasis that they have on recruiting, including Marcus Freeman taking a very personal place, not just with recruiting the defensive line, but when I talked to Elijah Page the other day. And you've had Monroe Freeling tell you the same thing. They don't just talk to Harry Hiestand and Tommy Rees. They're talking to Marcus Freeman. And I think that's a big thing. That's a really, really big thing, Ryan, to have your head coach, because you have to be able to dominate in the trenches if you're going to win a championship in Notre Dame. And this class is a huge step. You had a really good class last year, right? Came up a little short in numbers and interior impact. But you combine that with an elite 2023 class, it maybe starts the process where, you know, you're becoming that team that's pumping out NFL players, you know, year after year after year on the D-line. Notre Dame's got to get there. The offensive line, we're not worried about. We know it's going to get there as long as Harry Hiestand's here. Maybe that's a, you know, blind faith or whatever, but that's just the track record, right? The D-line has to show it. I was actually more confident that Al Washington was going to be able to recruit or coach the D-line than I was recruiting. I know a lot of people were like, oh, he's going to be a great recruiter. I wasn't as sold on that, to be honest with you. The reason I say that is if you look at the great linebacker class he had last year at Ohio, for at Ohio State, I think all those kids were from Ohio. I mean, C.J. Hicks is from Ohio. Sonny Styles is from Ohio. Reed Powers is from Ohio. I'm trying to think of who the other linebacker was they got in that class. I know I'm drawing a blank here. They had a really good – it was a four-man class when they added Sonny Styles to it. Oh, geez, give me 1 second. I'm pulling up the list, trying to remember who that fourth guy was in the linebacker class last year. So I said C.J. Hicks was from Ohio. Sonny Styles from Ohio. That's 2 5-star kids. Gabe Powers from Ohio. So, yeah, it looks like they just got the three, right? So let me see here. D.N. Yeah, they just got the three. That was a really, really good linebacker class, right? But they were all Ohio kids. Mm-hmm. They didn't recruit like that every single year, if we're being honest, right? And then could you then go recruit defensive linemen at a place like Notre Dame that way? That was a different story. Look at the year before, the two linebackers they signed the year before, Reed Carrico, who was a 4-star kid, top 250 kid, also from Ohio. You go back to 2020, and it's a very similar story for the most part. You know, you look at the linebacker class, you had Cody Simon from Jersey because Notre Dame didn't push for him. Had a couple guys. Court Williams was in that class, but I don't believe he was recruited by Coach Washington. So I wasn't as sold on it. I needed to see that he could recruit, because you can't just recruit a bunch of in-state top 50 kids in Notre Dame. You got to go across the country, and he's done that. You know, Keon Keeley being from Florida, Devin Houston being from Maryland by way of Canada. You know, Boubacar Traore being from Massachusetts. Jason Moore being from Maryland. Like, there is nobody in his backyard he can go get. Brandon Davis Swain is the closest thing to that. And so I think that's a big, big, big part of this conversation, Ryan, is, you know, I do think he answered some questions for me, and that encourages me even more because I thought the coaching thing would be the one thing I could point to and say, yeah, I saw him coach the BC D-line. I saw what that group could do. I know he can coach the D-line. The question is, can he recruit against Bama, and can he recruit against Ohio State for Ohio kids? It's easy to recruit Ohio kids to Ohio State, but can you recruit Ohio kids away from Ohio State? Whole different animal. That we didn't know, and so far, so good when it comes to Coach Washington in that regard.
Yeah, yeah, and I mean, I like that you point to his kind of, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, the Harold Landry, obviously, the development, and you just kind of reemphasized that right there. He did an excellent job, and the important part about that was he was a main recruit for Harold Landry and Max Richardson, who's a linebacker at Boston College. They were sneaky good football players, man, because right. They were not highly rated kids. They were like 3-star recruits. They were not high recruits at all. So that tells me that he can identify talent and he can develop talent.
Right.
And now he's showing you that the Ohio right. State stuff was not just Ohio. Like, he can go
right.
get a Boubacar. He can go get a Devin Houston from Maryland, which is a territory that we have talked right. about needs to be touched by Notre Dame.
And not often. One Notre Dame's had a ton of success for recently. Exactly. That's the key. And like, to the back of the BC point, I mean, we talk about Harold Landry, who had 22 tackles for loss, 16 and a half sacks. But often gets lost that year is Kevin Kavalik had 14 and a half tackles for loss. Zach mm-hmm. Allen was also a defensive lineman on that team. He had 10 tackles for loss. You know, those guys could get after the quarterback. Zach Allen and Kevin Kavalik combined for 10 and a half sacks, which is pretty impressive when you consider the other defensive end had 16 and a half, right? And so when you look at it, you say, you know, if he can get BC kids to play at that level, I know he can get the kids that Notre Dame's going to have.
Yep.
So it's a really big thing for him. Now, Kent, he's done a really good job. I would argue that right now Notre Dame has a chance to have a top 5 to 7 D-line class right now. And that might be too low because of, you know, you have a Keon Keeley. But to me, to really make this a generational D-line class, one that you just look and say, boy, we haven't seen a class like this at Notre Dame in a long, 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 long time. He's got to close on Jason Moore, in my opinion. Like, to me, Jason Moore is the difference between, man, you had an excellent D-line class. You got a 5-star. You got some really good football players. Man, those kids are all starters, and you're gonna be good to go. But to have that one where people talk about this D-line class kind of like they have past Georgia classes and Alabama classes, and to a degree the A&M class last year, you need Jason Moore. You need that second truly elite prospect. All the other guys are top 50 to 100 guys, in my opinion. Devin Houston's a top 150 guy. Jason Moore, to me, is a top 50 guy right now. Within the gap between him where he is as a top 50 guy and being a 5-star is not that great. It's one good offseason, and he could be that guy. That's going to be the key for Coach Washington. Can you really close it out, bat 1,000, and get that final piece to make this a, in my opinion, what would be a generational defensive line class for Notre Dame? And what a way to start your Notre Dame career. He might want to rethink this whole thing because he's like, well, now people expect this from me every year. You know what I mean? Like, there's nowhere to go but down. I say kiddingly, but no, but in seriousness, Jason Moore, getting him has to be the final piece of this to really take this thing over the top.
Yeah, I mean, you quantified it perfectly. It goes from a really good class to an elite class if you get Jason Moore. Program-changing type of class. Like, I think when you think of Coach Washington, obviously, with his Ohio State ties, when you think of Ohio State when they've been at their best, they're trotting out the Boses that go right into Chase Young, that go into the next great defensive end. Like, that's just what they've – that's when Ohio State's been at the best. And I think you need to see a similar thing at Notre Dame now, right? Like, you need to see a pipeline of great football great players at that position because the defensive end position is so important. And if you're able to walk out off the bus – Keon Keeley, Jason Moore, Brennan Vernon, they're all walking together. Man, that is a difficult sight to see for an opposing offensive coordinator. Let's be honest, man. Like, those guys are impressive-looking dudes. And I agree with you, and I want to emphasize it more for people because I feel like we talk about Jason, obviously, a lot, but I don't think that we really – at least I don't think I've done it enough to just kind of say this for a second. I think that Jason Moore is a top 50 player right now, like you just said, But this kid is legitimate upside, like top 15 to 20 player in the country if he hits his ceiling. I think he's that special of a player. This is not just a, you know, a throw-in type of player. Like, this guy, in most years, is the best defensive lineman you're going to sign. This guy is a special, special football player.
I mean, you talk about, like, the defensive line Notre Dame faced in 2018 against Clemson, right? I mean, the kid on the opposite end of – I'm trying to remember the kid's name. The kid that was the lower pick for Clemson in 2016. I had to take a nap. Yeah, Kevin Dodd. You know, he was he was a really good football player. Yep. You know, but you look at the rest of that line. You had Clelin Ferrell was a top five pick. He had 19 and a half tackles for loss. Christian Wilkins was an elite player, first round pick, 15 tackles for loss. Austin Bryant was that's who I was thinking of. Austin Bryant. Kevin Dodd was with Shaq Lawson. Shaq Lawson. You had Xavier Thomas. You had Dexter Lawrence. Like, you just had, like, big-time NFL players across the board, and you think about what that team was able to do. Just blow out Notre Dame, because Notre Dame couldn't score on them. Alabama couldn't score on them. Like, you couldn't score on that defense when they were healthy. And Notre Dame didn't have to face Dexter Lawrence. People forget. He was suspended. He didn't even play in the postseason. So, I mean, that's just – that tells you how good that unit was, and you're looking at a similar type of group if they can get Jason Moore.
And you know what else, too, is we've talked about the linebacker recruiting in recent years. Obviously – Clemson had Isaiah Simmons, who was a linebacker, safety. He was that hybrid role, right? The one that Trenton Simpson now plays for Clemson. But Clemson really hasn't had great inside linebackers during their time. They've had really good college players like Ben Bulware and then James Skalski and like that brand of player. But
Trey
imagine
Lamar, Kendall Joseph.
Who are good, solid players. Obviously not NFL players.
Right, because Trey Lamar was a good all-ACC player, big, thick kid, but he went undrafted, right? Exactly. I mean, to your point.
Yeah, and I'm just imagining a world if Notre Dame's able to put together this class in a couple years, we're talking about guys like Drake Bowen, Jalen Snead, that type of player playing behind him. Man, it's just the speed that you have on the first, second, and third level potentially just because of this recruiting class. Right. Just because of 2023, it could be special. It really could be.
James Lawrence, Zensi had a great, I mean, I get where people are talking about. Once our 2022 linebackers with the 2023 defensive line class get a little older, I don't care who they line up on offense. I think that's where that excitement comes from. And again, we're not even talking about how, you know, they've got a top 50 recruited linebacker in this year's class, right? And they did so well in last year's linebacker class, they've already moved Josh Burnham to defensive end. Right. You know, you've got to be able to dominate the trenches. I did want to address one thing that was brought up, Ryan, when we were talking about it from Quinn. He said, but didn't Washington not get Vernon out of Ohio when he was at Ohio State? Sorry if I misunderstand the point you made. He didn't recruit Brendan Vernon. He was the linebackers coach at Ohio State. He recruited linebackers. And, of course, he had his region. Somebody asked about Travion Henderson. He was the number two to Travion. He was the regional recruiter, right? But that was a Tony Alford deal, right? It's – you look at the success he had, it was recruiting the linebacker position. He was the linebackers coach at Ohio State. So Larry Johnson was the one responsible for getting or not getting defensive linemen, and it was him who they beat for Brendan Vernon, not Al Washington. Mm-hmm. So just want to make sure that we're clear on that. So let's move on, Ryan. Mm-hmm. Offensive line. So obviously Harry Hiestand got on the board here in the last couple of weeks when he landed Sam Pendleton, four-star kid out of North Carolina, Ronald Reagan High School. And said, I think it's probably Faftown or Paftown, you know, so we'll see if it's Paftown. So yes. One of those is probably going to be silent. I'm not sure, sir, which one it is. You know, you get him. That was a really unique recruitment. As we said earlier, you know, that was a good start for Coach Hiestand, but it's one of those ones where I kind of felt like once they got involved, Notre Dame was going to be hard to beat. You know, it's just, you know, but then you got to give Coach Hiestand the credit for that, because why was Notre Dame going to be hard to beat? It's because of the tradition that was started by who? Harry Hiestand, right?
Right.
So he gets some credit. But the point is, it wasn't like it was a really, let's be honest, it wasn't a super challenging recruitment, right? Sure. I've accused Jeff Quinn of winning not challenging recruitments in the past. We're going to be fair when we look at Coach Hiestand. That's one you should have won. I mean, that shouldn't have been a difficult one. The rest are going to be harder. Right. And even the kids that like Notre Dame, like a Monroe Freeling, like a Sullivan Absher, like a Charles, you know, Jagasaw, like some of those, you know, Elijah Page, you know, Samson Okunlola, those are going to be a little harder, because even though they love Coach Hiestand and the tradition he's built, there's also a lot of attraction to other programs, whether it be local or up and coming and those type of things. And so we're going to learn a lot about, you know, Coach Hiestand's ability to really do what he did the first time, which is go across the country, get the guys that you want, that you think have the really high ceilings, and turn them into elite linemen. That's what he did the last time around. We're going to have to find out, because, again, good start with Pendleton, but we're really going to find out if he's that recruiter moving forward. And it's going to come down to his ability to not only get Selvin Absher, but can you close on Monroe Freeling? Can you close on Charles Jagasaw? Can you add that fifth guy? You know, that's going to be the thing that's going to really tell us if he's back to being an elite recruiter of top offensive linemen.
Said perfectly. Pendleton's a really good start. He's obviously premier. He's a ideal interior player in this class, whether he winds up as guard or as center, maybe even long-term. He's a really good first addition to this class. But for me, Coach Hiestand, and he has obviously a reputation as a really good recruiter. So we're going to give him the benefit of the doubt. And he has started off this where we talked about Selvin Absher a bunch to start this show. He has, I think, flipped Notre Dame into their favor, obviously, in that recruitment. Now, the important part of this is that you do not want to leave this recruitment without at least one to two true offensive tackles. And we've talked about that a ton in the past. Mm-hmm. You need to get a Monroe Freeling and a Charles Jagasaw. You need those players in this class. Because if you get obviously Austin Saraveld is now off the board, committed to Ohio State. But if you would have gotten Austin Saraveld, Sam Pendleton, then you would have got a Selvin Absher, like those types of players who may all end up being interior players down the line, then you're going to get in trouble with the numbers type of conversation. But you know, a guy like Monroe Freeling is a true left tackle. You know this. Charles Jagasaw could be a right tackle. Maybe he's a guard eventually. Maybe Selvin Absher could stick a tackle. The balancing of tackles and interior player in this class, I think, is absolutely huge. And they've put themselves in a great position. You have Pendleton already committed. You've put yourself in great position with Absher. You put yourself in a really good position with Monroe Freeling. You have to close that one. And you've been in a good spot with Charles Jagasaw for a while. It just has not closed yet. Right. So closing on those guys is paramount. But again, if everything happens, and right now I would say that Notre Dame is the leader for all four of those guys I mentioned, because obviously Pendleton's in the class, so they are obviously his leader. The other three, I think they're in a really good spot. And then we'll see what happens with a guy like Elijah Page, maybe down the line, mm-hmm. or a Joe Otting that was just offered recently. Like, maybe he's a guy long-term play. We'll see what happens with that recruitment. But if you land all of the players right now in this class at offensive line that you are currently in the lead for, Harry Hiestand has answered any question of anybody that wants to know if he still has the fire to be a recruiter.
And just so we're clear, Ryan, you believe, and I now believe, I didn't before with Absher, obviously, because he wasn't, but now you believe that Notre Dame is the leader for Freeling, Jagasaw, and Absher, correct?
Yeah. Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah.
And I think they're going to be a player with Elijah Page, but I don't think they lead for him. I think they got to get him on campus, and that's still a relatively new relationship. Joe Otting, I think if they make a push for him and they want him, I think they could get him as well from the early things I've been told. But, you know, I think the tackle part is important, because I think that's why, to me, that's why I think you've got to hit a home run on. You've got to hit the inside trade on those three we just talked about. I think two things. Number one, right? This is why this is so important. Because all three of those kids are looking at schools that you need to kind of conquer or keep behind you. And this is an important part of this. Like, this is one of the things we don't talk enough about in recruiting. It's not the reason it's, you know, you need to shop down the right aisle, right? Not, you know, a different aisle that is for the lazy recruiter who doesn't want to put in the work. But the reason you need to shop down the same aisle as Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson and Oklahoma and Georgia, not Oklahoma, Georgia and teams like that, is because when you beat them for kids, you're not just adding a really good player to your team. You're keeping one from them. And that's huge. And when you talk about Notre Dame, who are the programs right now that are clearly just are ahead of Notre Dame? And when you look at the last 3-4 years from a production on the field standpoint, from an NFL production standpoint, from a recruiting standpoint, you know, to me, Ryan, it's really only three schools. Mm-hmm. Four schools. There's only really four schools, right? And we all know them. It's Alabama, Georgia, and that was true even before they won the title, because they beat Notre Dame twice, and they had, you know, been to the playoff and actually won playoff games, something Notre Dame never did, Right. Ohio State, obviously, and then Clemson. Well, if you look at Clemson right now, and if you're going to put together the defensive line class that you're in the process of putting together, and Clemson beats you for two of those three kids, they now have an offensive line class coupled with the two kids I really like that they got from last year. They got a kid from Ohio that I really like, big, strong kid. They got the kid from their own state that I really like. So they got two good players last year. They were a little short on numbers, but they had two good players. If they're able to add Monroe Freeling and Sullivan Absher to the class, all of a sudden, like, hey, you know what? They're putting blockers together that maybe can keep you from dominating them the way that you can. But if you get the defensive line class you get and you beat them for Monroe Freeling and Sullivan Absher and Sam Pendleton, all of a sudden, now that's how you dominate them in the trenches, right? Because you've been able to beat – you've not only added great offensive linemen to your team to help you handle their elite defensive line, but you've now taken away their top offensive line targets that are going to make it a lot harder for them to stop your defensive line. Because the one thing that kept Notre Dame in that game in 2018, the matter of fact, the only thing that really kept them in the game, two things. One, that was one of those weird years where Notre Dame had two really good corners, right? But the biggest reason those corners had success is because Notre Dame's defensive line flat whipped Clemson's offensive line in that game. Flat whipped them. Now, Notre Dame couldn't do anything on the other side of the ball, but that side of the ball held up. And that was with a good offensive line. But you start taking away their top targets from them, Ryan, you've not only built yourself up, you're now tearing down a team that's ahead of you. It's why it's important to beat Ohio State for Brennan Vernon. It's important to beat Ohio State for kids that they want. It's important to beat Georgia and Alabama because you've taken guys they want, and that's going to hurt them and impact players that they want. And I think right. That adds even more value to why it's important that Coach Hiestand have this and Coach Reese and Coach Chad Bowden have the success that they need to have when it comes to putting together this elite offensive line. It not only builds you up, but it tears down one of the programs you're trying to chase. Because, like, putting distance between yourself and Michigan with Jagasaw, that's important, right? But it's not as important as catching and beating and passing Clemson. It's incredibly important for Notre Dame to do that, which adds even more intrigue to what Coach Hiestand has a chance to do on the recruiting trail this year.
No, it's perfectly said again. I always root for, beating Michigan for anything. But like you said, the fact that Notre Dame is beating a team like a Clemson for several key targets, if they were going to beat an Ohio State, if they're going to keep Keon Keeley in the class that an Alabama really wants, right, that is trying to get him in the class, that's the difference there. Beating the best teams in college football for players that they want. And for Notre Dame to separate themselves, like you just said, they need to be able to do that. So, yes, I think that we have seen – and we've seen it in the past, right? Coach Hiestand, and you've said it before, Brian, it's like he identifies and he go gets his class. He keeps the board small because he knows he's going to get his guys. And I think that it is important. I do think it is because, when he got hired, a lot of people had speculation that he's not going to want to recruit. He's getting older, right? Like, he doesn't want to recruit anymore. If he's able to pull this class that he potentially can – I think that's a big exclamation point that, like, obviously he wants to be here. He wants to build something great, and he wants to be a part of Marcus. And one thing that we didn't talk about is that we're examining new hires for very different, like, demographic of people and backgrounds and resumes. And the fact that Coach Hiestand wanted to come back for Marcus Freeman when he doesn't have anything else to prove. He built offensive line U. He doesn't have anything to prove. He wants to be here. And he wants to be a part of the ideology that Marcus Freeman brings. Right. That, I think, is important.
I think it also says a lot, too, Ryan, about the staff that Coach Freeman can put together and his ability to manage a staff, right? That's such an important thing. Can you not only hire good coaches, but can you get all those coaches, like you just said, different age groups, different backgrounds, different all types of different things? They're very different dudes. Can you get them all came from different schools? Can you get them all immediately going in the right direction? It says a lot about Coach Freeman's ability to lead, but also that he is a guy that guys want to be led by. And I think that's an important thing. The fact that, I don't want to get off tangent too much, but the fact that Notre Dame is now concerned about how does the roster going to shake out because they expected guys to jump in the portal and nobody jumped in the portal. Why? Because everybody wants to play for Coach Freeman. Right now, guys jumped in the portal that had a place to come back to, right? Like Sebo Flemister and some of those guys got in the portal, but that's because they weren't, they didn't have an invitation back because they were, you know, seniors and you know, fifth year senior thing is more of a you're not entitled to that kind of thing. Right. So it really is. It says a lot. It says a lot. Before we move on, Shelton Hager, 91 with a super chat. Been a while, Shelton. Maybe just because it's been a while for live viewing. Love you guys. Much love to you, Brian, Vince, Ryan, and Sean. Yeah, Shelton, we haven't seen you in a while on the board or here. Hope you and your family are doing well, man. Hope you and your wife, hope your wife's doing a lot better, and hope you guys are doing well, man. You're still in our prayers. There's no doubt about it. It's good seeing you back in the show, buddy. Absolutely love seeing you back in the show. So thank you very, very much for the super chat. Ryan, I think the coach that Marcus Freeman hired, that was the biggest question mark in every single facet, was Chancey Stuckey. He'd been a coach for 1 year. He had not even seen a full recruiting cycle through because he didn't arrive at Baylor till like just January of the year before. The cycle had already begun. Doesn't even like complete like a full year there, like a full class there. I mean, they signed a class, but it was like, you know, he got a late start on it, and you know, it was an unknown. What can this guy do? I have no idea. He's been a football coach for 1 year, and so far, you know, obviously we liked what we saw from him in the fall as a coach. That was probably the thing that I was least concerned about, because I felt like, look, as a former receiver, played in the NFL, this guy knows the game. He, you know, I assume he'll be able to teach it, you know, to some level degree. And the bar was so low from a coaching standpoint, it was going to be hard for him not to get there. But I think when I look at the other aspect of it, the recruiting piece was the bigger question mark for me. And so far, man, look, again, he's got one commitment. That's Braylon James. And he's going to ultimately be judged not on where Notre Dame stands as the leader or not with top players now, but can they sign top players? I think that's going to be the thing that is going to ultimately determine whether or not he's gauged a success. But we're not there yet, right? This is a midterm. Through the midterm, it's hard not to be impressed with what Coach Stuckey's done, not just with who he's landed, but where Notre Dame stands with a lot of very, very talented wide receivers.
Yeah, if we're talking about this progress report type of conversation, right? Al Washington's the best in class, but that's only because three of the last four commits that we've had have been defensive linemen, obviously, for Notre Dame, right? But the person I would say, Brian, that has been talked about most from recruits, the guy's name that you hear so often, is Chancey Stuckey. And it's always unprompted. Even if it's not, and it's funny because it's not always just the wide receiver recruits either. People just talk about Chancey Stuckey, about how great of a guy he is. And then obviously he gets on the board with Braylon James, which is a fantastic player, top 100 ranked player out of the state of Texas. And he has obviously a previous relationship with him because he was at Baylor. And like you said, doesn't have a ton of experience recruiting, but he does know Braylon. And then we're like, okay, what's next now, right? And then this blue gold visit, he knocks it out of the park with both Jaden Greathouse, which again, Texas kid, first offer he got was from Baylor. He has a relationship with him. Some people would expect that, like, okay, he's making rounds with guys that he had previous relationships with. Makes sense. But the fact that Rodney Gallagher left that visit, and even if they don't end up with Rodney Gallagher, I think it speaks volumes to the fact of how much ground a person can make up in such a short amount of time, and just the impact that he can have on guys in the recruiting world. I think that it says a lot for what Coach Stuckey has been able to do so far. The Carnell Tate thing, that's not anything to blame, in my opinion, on Chancey Stuckey. There's just other factors in that recruitment. That is not a Chancey Stuckey miss, quote unquote, right?
If NIL wasn't a thing, we would be having a different conversation about that.
Exactly. So I think that right now, Chancey Stuckey has probably answered the most questions of the new hires, I would say, in my opinion anyway. And I think he has a chance to, we've talked about it plenty of times, wide receiver recruiting from a depth standpoint this year and from a talent perspective. You needed to sign a really good class. And if they're able to land on top of a Braylon James, a Jaden Greathouse in theory, and they pull, I don't want to call it an upset because I don't think Rodney Gallagher ever had a leader per se, but it would still be a huge monumental win to go into Pennsylvania, a place that's been kind of absent from your recruiting prowess recently, And to get a guy like a Rodney Gallagher, I think would be would be massive, to be honest. Yeah.
Well, and there's other guys. Look, I think the recruitment we're not talking about enough that's super important for Notre Dame is Ronan Hanifin. And you know, we talk about Greathouse and Gallagher and they're highly ranked guys and they're talented players. And I don't take anything away from them as players. I mean, they're excellent players. I mean, Rodney Gallagher to me is a top 100 recruit. I talked about this on the message board today at Irish Breakdown that, you know, my view on Jaden Greathouse has changed. And, you know, Ryan's adjusting his camera right now, so we'll get him on there so he can hear me when I say this. But, you know, one of the reasons is because, you know, talking to Ryan, and he was adamant that Jaden Greathouse was better than I thought he was. And so I did a deeper dive in his film and did some watch some game film. And, you know, my opinion on him has changed a little bit. And I now see a top 100 caliber player because, you know, that's just what you got to do. Sometimes you got to get your own biases out of the way. But he's a really talented player. And then take away the ranking, you just look at how the fit would be with him and with Gallagher and all that. But the reason we don't talk about Ronan Hanifin enough, more than some of the other things we joked about the other day, is he's just not a highly ranked recruit. But the fact of the matter is, I don't care. Do you trust Rivals and 247 and On3 and Irish Breakdown? Or do you trust the coaches at Notre Dame, Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Ohio State, USC, Georgia, right? LSU? You get the point? Okay, maybe not LSU. But you get the point on the rest of them. And those schools are pushing hard for Ronan Hanifin. I mean, Nick Saban and that offensive staff at Alabama wants Ronan Hanifin bad at wide receiver.
Right.
Clemson is pushing for him hard as a wide receiver. With all due respect, if those teams want a kid at receiver with their track record, I'm listening, right? I'm listening. And so we're not talking enough about him. And, you know, you and I had some fun today talking about comparisons and style of play comparisons. And the one that he really reminds me of, and I just, it kept popping in my head as I was trying to think of a comparison for Ronan Hanifin that wasn't a lazy one. And just Chris Godwin from Penn State kept popping up in my head, you know. And, you know, that guy was a heck of a player at Penn State. And when he's been healthy, he's been a heck of a player in the NFL, you know, at least statistically. So to me, he's not a guy we're talking about enough about as far as not just, okay, would he be in, like people said, would he be a nice fourth addition? I don't know if he would rank fourth if they signed the four we talked about, right? I mean, especially from an offer list standpoint. He's another guy that's a very important pickup because the reason I say that is as good as Jaden Greathouse is and Rodney Gallagher is and Braylon James is, Braylon to a degree and Jaden Greathouse to a degree, they're battling the big boys for. Rodney Gallagher's being slept on a little bit. For whatever reason, the Ohio States, the Bamas, the Clemsons, they're not pushing for him, which their mistake is going to be Notre Dame's gain, hopefully. But there's not a player on the board that Notre Dame is going to have to battle the big boys more than Ronan Hanifin, and that's what we talked about, right? Like, yes, those other guys are great players, but if you land Ronan Hanifin, and right now I'm not as confident as I was about this 2 months ago. I'm not. Look, for a host of reasons, which, you know, we talked about in the message board, but you're going to have to beat Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma if you want to get Ronan Hanifin. And that in itself is not only adding a big-time player, but that's another aspect of it. And so to me, for Chancey Stuckey, for Marcus Freeman, for Chad Bowden, because this is going to have to be a team effort, that's one that could end up being the hardest of all of them to get because – for whatever reason, as much as Ronan likes Notre Dame, he's decided he wants to see this thing through. And you get to a point where you may have as a staff to kind of start making some decisions in late June. Like, look, we love you, Ronan. You're a top guy. You're a must get, but we can't afford to not get a fourth receiver in this class. And when I say fourth, just pure number, because I think, you know, you're going to get into situations where, you know, Rico Flores is making his commitment known on July 3rd. Rodney Gallagher's making a commitment on July 4th. I could see a scenario in which Jaden Greathouse is ready to make his decision. Right now, I think Notre Dame would rather have Ronan Hanifin than Rico and Malik Elzey and some of those guys. But you get into July, and if Ronan's not giving you an indication that he's ready to wind this thing down, you may be forced to say, we've got to go with somebody else because we can't afford to see this thing through and then miss. And that's what's going to make it interesting. But to me, that's the sort of the dream class right now of guys that are on. And then there's guys like Tyler Williams and guys like that. That's when you really see if they've got something going on. But you know, right now, I think that's going to be a tough one. I'm not going to really spend too much time talking about him until he gets on campus, but he's got a chance to finish. But that's going to be the key, Ryan. You've got to finish, right? And I think with Greathouse, I would say you have the best shot at right now with Greathouse. We could kind of go back and forth on whether Hanifin or Gallagher. I think we both agree that Notre Dame leads or is at least in the lead group and has a good shot to close, but they've got to do exactly that. They've got to close. And right. Neither one of those kids will be on campus at Notre Dame last. They both will have visits after Notre Dame, which we'll address with another question that we have down here. So big, big opportunity for Chancey Stuckey. Great start, but closing is going to be the key.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Yeah. I mean, if you would have told me a couple months ago that Notre Dame would maybe have a better chance at some point for Jaden Greathouse comparative to a Ronan Hanifin, I probably would have shook my head. Like, that's not a tangible right thing. That's not possible, right?
Right.
But like you said, I mean, Ronan Hanifin's offer list rivals the best in the nation. Like, it is a impressive. I mean, you mentioned all the schools, and USC also offered as well. So, and I know a lot of wide receivers probably want to play with Lincoln Riley. Like, that's just a natural thing, right? So, yeah, it's going to be a tough pull, but if you're able to get both the Texas kids in the class that you've been recruiting, a Rodney Gallagher, who's a really quick twitch slot that you just don't really have on the roster right now, and then Ronan Hanifin brings, and I really want people to understand this again, because we don't talk enough about Ronan Hanifin. We don't for a lot of reasons. But I would say here that from the moment me and Brian talked about him, when I first came on the Irish Breakdown, I think one of the first things we talk about, Brian, is like, how is this kid not a four-star recruit? Like, right. This kid's a really good player, man. So, yeah, it has a chance to be something special. We are off to a great start. We feel that Coach Stuckey is changing a narrative that was, billed as him because, again, he just didn't have the experience. And if he's able to pull off that type of class, then all of a sudden, there's no question marks anymore. Because, I mean, just seeing him in person – I would be very surprised if the wide receiver group, just in general from a coaching perspective, wasn't much better coached this upcoming season than in previous years. I would
and
be
that's
shocked.
A low bar. I mean, that's yes. a pretty low bar. Exactly. I think the question is how much better, right? Exactly. How much better? Yep. And that's going to be the key. And I expect, it's already better. It's just how much better is going to be the key. And that leads into the next part of it, Ryan, is if you go put a better product on the field, all of a sudden it makes it a little easier to do this thing the next go around in 2024.
Absolutely. And 2024 looks like a really good wide receiver group early on, doesn't it? I mean,
no doubt.
Ryan Wingo and Ryan Pelham and Zion Reagans. And there's a lot of really talented wide receivers in 2024. If you're able to close on a couple of these guys quickly, gets the class you want, then all sights for 2024. But got to close.
So another coach that we want to discuss is Coach D. McCullough. And he's had an interesting one, right? So he inherits a running back in 2023, inherits a running back in 2022 who is already signed and on campus by the time he was hired. And so it's kind of like, okay, well, what are you going to do? Okay, I'm gonna see your 23 commitments and I'm going to get you a 2022 kid, right? I mean, he goes out and gets Jabron Payne. You know, it's one of those ones where it's a good pickup, but it doesn't necessarily tell us a lot about his ability to recruit at Notre Dame. Right. And because he had already gotten him to sign with him in Indiana, there was all that relationship. You know, Notre Dame was the biggest school that was pushing for him. And then you look at the 2023 class and it's like, well, you know, it's a really down year running back. There's really only, a buddy and I were kind of going over this yesterday, Ryan, and we were kind of going over the running back class and just how mediocre it really is this year. You know, and we're kind of looking at running backs. We're like, okay, obviously Cedric Baxter's legit. right? Like, I don't know if you had a chance to see Cedric Baxter, but he's legit. He's a really good football player.
He's a
top
boy.
Back. Yeah, he's a top back in any year. Justice Haynes is a really good player. I don't think he's the elite back that some make him out to be. Like, Rivals has him as the number one back in the class. He's not that. Richard Young's a really good back, in my opinion. But it's just, after that, it kind of like, there's a good backs, but there's not a lot of elite backs. Then obviously he set his sights on Jaden Lamar, and Notre Dame is making a push for him. That's a very telling recruitment. Can you get him from the West Coast? I would imagine Jalen's recruitment will be over sooner rather than later, and can you close out on him is going to be a test for him. But the real test for Dylan McCullough is really going to be 2024. I think that's going to be the test for him, because he's in a situation where he can't go out and recruit a bunch of backs, because A, there aren't a lot of backs in this class. B, you already have a back in your class, so that adds a little bit of intrigue to it. We're going to learn a lot more about him over the next year than we will over the next couple months. And I think he's going to make a splash, and has already made a splash, but it's hard for him. Like, there isn't a Monroe Freeling out there for him to get in this class. There isn't a Braylon James out there for him to get in this class, a Keon Keeley, a Jason Moore for him to get in this class. It's just that guy's not out there, in our opinion. So his situation is a little bit different. And we're also going to talk about, you know, Jared Parker, similar situation. Actually, let's just kind of talk about them both now, Ryan. Is he inherits a top 150 player, and they're kind of done. The only kid that they would still like to get is Deuce Robinson, who's a, you know, five-star caliber guy, but because you dropped him for months before Jared Parker got hired, that's an impossible task to ask, you know, in my opinion. So he's another guy. We're going to learn a lot more about Jared Parker as a recruiter in 2024 than we are in 2023 from an identification standpoint. Can you ID top players, and then can you go get them? So those are two guys that right now, if I were to give them a grade, it would sort of be, you know, an incomplete, you know, or you know, to be determined, or maybe say, hey, you know, they've maybe this would be they've kind of tested out of the first half of the class, right? Like, you know what I mean? Like, they're not being graded on the same way that the other coaches are, simply because right. The opportunity is not there for them to go out and make that kind of splash. So we're going to learn a lot more about them, and that's going to be key. Like, you know, Jared Parker, okay, can you identify who you guys want and go get them early? Maybe you can get these guys early, since you don't have a lot of 2023 stuff to worry about other than helping on some other guys. I think that so when you look at Dylan McCullough, they've already started offering some running backs. You and I both love that kid from Wisconsin. Like, if he's able to go up there and get that kid, it's like, okay, mission accomplished. But that's not it. I mean, there's a lot of good backs in the 2024 class. It's early yet, but it's definitely looking like a better class nationally than the 2023 class from a depth standpoint. Would you agree with that, Ryan?
Yeah, from everyone I've seen so far. I mean, you're talking about Corey Smith, who's obviously a really talented player out of the state of Wisconsin. Stacey Gage from IMG is a legit back. There's
Davion Gase. Yeah.
Davion Gase, yeah.
What's a Brian Jackson? That's a kid that they've offered
Out of Texas.
He's a big boy.
He's, you know, a really,
I mean, so
big boy.
It's a, you know, Anthony Carey, they've already offered a scholarship. They're still recruiting Cameron Davis, who's committed to Florida State. He's a talented back. He has some interest in Notre Dame. Jarrett Gibson, Nathaniel Palmer. I mean, so they've already thrown some offers out. Yep. Stacey Gage, they're not going to, they're not in that one, right? Like, that's not one that they're in on. But, you know, a lot of these other guys you look at and say, hey, look, these are guys that I think they have a shot with. These are guys that they got to go out and they've got to get one of those guys, right? That's going to be the key for Coach McCullough. And then for Coach Parker, it's like, okay, you're at tight end you, right? Don't make the mistake the last guy made. And John McNulty did some really good things in Notre Dame as a position coach. But he kind of recruited like he was at Rutgers early on, you know, and when you got Jack Nichol, and, you know, they caught some breaks and they ended up with a really good class last year. But it's like, don't make that early mistake that you can't recover from. Don't get a guy like Cooper Flanagan, who we like. You should have got Cooper Flanagan, and then stop. Right. Like, those are the mistakes that he made. And, you know, look, let's be honest. They don't get Eli Raritan if his dad and grandpa weren't graduates of Notre Dame. Can we say that? Like, I mean, he's not picking Notre Dame after you ignored him for several months if he doesn't have those family ties. And so he's going to have to not make those mistakes and go out next year in 2024 and say, here's the elite players of this, at this position. Go out and get them, because you should be getting Michael Mayer types all the time. And, you know, that's a big part of this whole thing.
I can't believe they ignored Eli Raritan. I mean, he runs a 1.4 something 10-yard split.
I mean, right? I know, right? I can't believe somebody reported that. Like, that's – like, you're telling me Eli Raritan, 5 months removed from a torn ACL and surgery, is putting up better 10-yard splits than Kyle Pitts did at the NFL Scouting Combine? Come on.
I mean, that if it was truthfully a 1.4 something, that's like a cornerback elite time.
That's elite corner speed. That was bad. Exactly. That was better than Kevin Austin, who – I mean, that's – come on, guys. Like, can yeah. we just – you know, and then you have to, like, talk people off the – off of, like, look, he didn't – I promise you he did not run that less 5 months removed from ACL surgery.
Yes.
You know, like, you know.
And anyway. And if you're on the message board, you know that little shot about. I just took. Yeah, I'm sorry.
You just had to get me fired up on that one.
I had to take it, man. I saw that number two, and I'm like, guys, that doesn't make any sense. But, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad that we coupled McCullough and Parker together, though. I think that was a
good because they're in unique situations. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'm starting a kind of a mini series that's going to be coming out soon that I'm basically, doing kind of a report card type of thing, at least like a progress report, wherever we want to kind of phrase it. But it's true. I mean, you fall into two positions that are not going to traditionally carry a lot of recruits. Like, it's not like an offensive line coach where you're going to have 4 to 5 recruits, 3, whatever it might be. There's multiple positions, right? We're talking about a tight end that in this class, there's going to be 1 to 2 players. And then we're talking a running back who we have one player in with Cedric Irvin Jr., obviously, and you can hold a second. So at most, each of these classes are holding 2 players. And both these coaches walk in with 1 guy already committed. We mentioned Cedric Irvin Jr. at running back. We mentioned Cooper Flanagan at tight end. Both good players. There's no doubt about it. But you've put yourself in a position, if you're Coach Parker, you're pretty much going – a lead or bust, right? Like, it's either you're going to get a guy. Or bust.
That's really it. There's only one tight end worth taking because I'd rather use that extra scholarship on a 5th defensive lineman, 5th offensive lineman, 5th receiver, 5th, 6th DB. I'd rather use that on anyone else than a second tight end in this class, unless that second tight end is Deuce Robinson.
Exactly. Right?
I mean, that to your point. Yes. Correct. Correct.
Yeah. No. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So it's Deuce or bust. If it ends up not being Deuce, you're still in a good spot with a Cooper Flanagan because he's a top 150 kid by a couple different platforms. He's a good football player. Cedric Irvin Jr., like we've kind of highlighted in the past, good, solid football player. You're in the conversation with the Jaden Lamar. It's a situation where you can bring in a second back. But like you said, Brian, the imprint of Coach McCullough and Coach Parker in on these programs from a recruiting standpoint is not going to be quantified by 2023. 2024 is going to be the class because they walked into a class that already had a committed each position. So, again, perfect point there.
What'll be interesting is if, like, maybe they can get a Jeremiah Love. Could he have an impact on getting a Jeremiah Love who maybe isn't a running back specifically, but can he play a role in getting him who's more of an athlete kind of guy? And that could be it too. And then the final coach is the one that I would say right now is the biggest mystery, Ryan, and that is Al Golden. We've heard his name a little bit, but not a ton. And a big reason for that is he was hired right before spring ball. And then, of course, the focus then is on the team, spring ball. He's just now getting on the road. And from everything we've been told, this is really his, going into his second week on the road. That's it. We're going to start learning a lot more about Al Golden here over the next month or two. What role does he play in closing on a Jason Moore? What role does he play in maybe getting them more in the game with a Caleb Downs, right? So Chris O'Leary and those guys have all done their job. Now it's out. Can Al Golden help take you further? Can he help maybe close the deal with Jason Moore along with Coach Freeman? What impact can he have on the linebacker recruit? So we're going to learn a lot more about Al Golden because unlike the two coaches we just talked about, there are players at his position on the board that he has to get. Right now, Notre Dame has a really good linebacker class with Drake Bowen, who's a top 50 recruit, and Preston Zenter, who's a top 250 kind of guy, right? But to really be an elite program, you've got to recruit that position and all positions, really, for the most part. But you've got to be able to put them, stack them on top of each other. And for this linebacker class to be able to match last year's linebacker class, you need to get Jaden Alsbury, in my opinion. Because I'm still not 100% sold Samuel Mpemba stays a linebacker. I'm not even close to 100% sold on that. You need to get a Jaden Alsbury or a Darren Gillette. You have to do it, right, to really say, hey, look, you're going out and compete with the big boys on the recruiting trail just like they are. right? Mm-hmm. You got to get one of the two, in my opinion. And so we're going to learn a lot about his ability as a main recruiter, but even more importantly, because look, with Marcus Freeman, recruiting linebackers shouldn't be as hard as maybe it is in other places. You've got right. James Laurinaitis and Marcus Freeman on your staff, right? That should help. Where I think we're really going to find out about Al Golden is, and he's talked a lot about wanting to be at Notre Dame and wanting to be a part of Notre Dame, but is he going to fall into the trap of other NFL coaches that come back to college with their eye on maybe other jobs that don't invest in recruiting the way that they invest in coaching? Joe right. Brady be an example. I think Coach Marone from Alabama last year falls into that category. That's something that I think is legit. And look, I'm not saying that based on any evidence of anything specific to Al Golden. This is more of a what we've seen from other coaches with similar pedigrees in the past. Former head coach, right? Former, you know, NFL coach. He's not coming to Notre Dame to be the defensive coordinator the next 15 years, right? Like, this isn't his retirement job. I would imagine he's young enough that he still has aspirations. But are you going to fully commit while you're here? That's a legitimate question that's not specific to Al Gold for anything he's done, but it was to be true of anyone coming in with his resume. And right. the biggest impact he's going to have, in my opinion, is can you help close the deal with the top dudes on the board, the linebackers we talked about, Jason Moore, the corners, Caleb Downs, guys like that. That's where he's going to get a chance to really make his presence felt. And that ultimately is what he's going to be judged on, in my opinion, even more so than just the linebackers. Just like Tommy Rees, you know, we talked a lot about the job that the offensive line coach has done, the receivers coach has done. But you know who else's name we hear a lot with recruits? Tommy Rees, yeah. right? And we haven't talked about him, but he's going to be judged on that. We're not going to spend any more time on him because this is focused on the new coaches. But can we start hearing Al Golden's name mentioned the way that we hear Tommy Rees's name? That's going to be a big key. And it's too early yet for that because, again, the season just kind of ended. Yep. And they're just now getting on the road. But over the next couple months is when we should start hearing that. If he's going to be putting in the work on the recruiting trail that he needs to, you're going to start hearing that through May and into June and July. That's going to be the question mark. And that's what he's going to be judged on, in my opinion, Ryan.
No, you're absolutely correct. I would say that, you know, we're going to – I don't want to say temper expectations early, but you're going to tread lightly for a little bit because, you know, for the simple fact is Coach Golden gets on the staff, the last of the new hires, obviously with the Super Bowl run, he comes in a little bit of a strange time, right? You, again, you said it like right before spring practice starting. So it's not like the most advantageous as far as showing off your recruiting prowess. And then you fall into a situation where, I mean, Notre Dame fans know this. The defensive class in 2023 has been higher as far as from a number standpoint comparative to the offensive side of the football. We know this. So for anything, Al Golden needed to come in there. And obviously he needs to make his touches on just the defense in general and what wrinkles and what it's going to look like, what the ideology is going to be. But then you're also, I've talked about it with Al Washington a little bit, coming in and making sure Keon Keeley's solid. He needs to also come in and say, like, this is what defense is going to look like. You still have Coach Freeman in here, who obviously has a huge influence, but, like, this is going to be what the defense is going to look like, and this is how you fit into this defense. So there's a lot that was on Coach Golden's plate from just a coaching perspective and just understanding that, like, you need to solidify guys in 2023 that, yes, this is the guy that I also want to come play for. So I think that the transition is just a little different comparative to maybe just a traditional position coach because there's a lot on his plate in that sense. But I also agree with you in every sense that there are elite linebackers still on the board. And whether Samuel Mpemba ends up as a defensive end long-term or he's a Will linebacker or a Mike, whatever he ends up being, the fact of the matter is right now you recruit him as a linebacker.
Yeah, he's an elite prospect.
Elite athlete.
Right.
Elite athlete.
Right. Yeah. And he's right now being recruited for your position.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yep. Yeah. So you have an elite athlete in Samuel Mpemba on the board. You have an elite football player in Jay Nosberry. Just fantastic, fantastic understanding of how to play the linebacker position. He's, of course, is in the Bayou. He's right. I mean, he goes to high school on LSU's campus. I mean, getting a player like that would be huge. But I don't want to undersell. And I know we don't talk about him a ton because we're still waiting for him to set up an official visit to Notre Dame. But Darian Gallette is a stud athlete, yeah. man. Like, really, yeah. really talented
and player. And more of a natural football player than Mpemba. Where Mpemba's an athlete that is not necessarily a natural football player yet. Gallette is a natural football player without a position yet, without a clearly defined position yet. I mean, the kid had 60 plus catches for over 1,400 receiving yards last year.
Silly.
He was a quarterback.
He was like
6'2", 215 at the time. I think you said he's hit a growth spurt since then. He's now up to 6'3", 225. Yep. I mean, just absurd stuff. So, like, you've got to get one of those guys. Like, you get one of those guys to go with Drake Bowen, who's a top 50 player, right? Mm-hmm. To go with Preston Zenter, who's a top 250 kid. You know, okay, now you're stacking those big time classes on top of each other. And that's what's, again, D line. That's 2 years in a row you will have stacked those classes. Cause everybody talks about if you put those 23 defensive line with the 22 linebackers, I'm like, hey, y'all, let's not forget what they did on the D line last year. Josh Burnham is now there. He was a top 100 recruit in high school. Tyson Ford was a top 100 recruit. At least one servicing Rivals had Aiden Gobier as a top 100 player. I had him as a top 100 caliber player with 5-star upside. And Donovan Heinisch is not a bum that people should be dismissing, right? So it's not like they had some garbage D-line class last year. They had a pretty good D-line class last year. And so you got to stack those things up on top of each other. And at linebacker, to me, getting one of those three guys is the way that you do that. And I would even argue if you get Mpemba, I would still want to push for another because, again, I'm not sold that Mpemba's going to stay at linebacker, in my opinion.
Yeah, but either way, I mean, Mpemba's a big cog because the perception of him, right? Like that is a big piece, especially because I know people are keep asking number one class. Well, Samuel Mpemba makes that a lot more achievable from just a perception standpoint. So,
but I would argue too. I mean, you know, I know the 5-star ranking, but like Jaden Osbury is a top 50 recruit.
Sure,
Darren Gallette isn't there yet, but if these services are smart, he will be. I think On3 actually does have him in the top 100 now.
Yeah, I think he's like 60-something. Right. Yeah, he's high now.
But he's going to keep going up, especially if he stays uncommitted for a while, because we know how that being uncommitted tends to have a really good impact on your ability as a football player because it helps you rise up in the rankings for some reason. So, you got to get one of those guys. So it's going to be interesting, Ryan. This staff has really made a great impact so far. So far, so good with the early returns on the staff. So I think now it's about, okay, you're ranked number one right now. It's wonderful. Everything is all, you know, sunshine and rainbows and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's about no one's going to remember you were ranked number one in June. they're going to remember, okay, where were you ranked in December? Where were you ranked in February? And that's going to require them to close. So midterm report cards, great. Don't slack off in the second half of the semester, right? That's going to be the key. I say that for you, Mr. Former Teacher. You know, you got to really make sure that you can close out the semester well.
Yeah. Progress reports are fun. I miss those days.
Yeah.
As I say, very sarcastically.
It's incredibly sarcastically, I'm sure. So, Ryan, that's going to do it for this section of the show. We're going to dive into our mailbag now, but really good discussion. Lots of great information there, Ryan. I really appreciate all that you brought to the table on that one.